We'll be reading from Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Adilila Chapter 4, The Confidential Reasons for the Lord's Appearance. Now this is Bengali, so it's not the same as Sanskrit. If you want to chant the verse, just bear that in mind. You do your best, but just bear that in mind. Admendriya Priti Vanshatare Balikam Krishnendriya Priti Icha Dore Premanam. Translation: the desire to gratify one's own senses is kama, lust. But the desire to please the senses of Lord Krishna is prema, love. Purport. The revealed scriptures describe pure love as follows. Sarvata dramsa rahitam satyapi dramsa karane yad bhava bandhanam. Yad bhava bandhanam, you know, suprema. If there is ample reason for the dissolution of a conjugal relationship, and yet such a dissolution does not take place, such a relationship of intimate love is called pure. The predominating gopis were bound to Krishna in such pure love. For them, there was no question of sexual love based on sense gratification. Their only engagement in life was to see Krishna happy in all respects, regardless of their own personal interests. They dedicated their souls only for the satisfaction of the personality of Godhead Sri Krishna. There was not the slightest tinge of sexual love between the gopis and Krishna. The author of Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita asserts with authority that sexual love is a matter of personal sense enjoyment. All the regular principles in the Vedas pertaining to desires for popularity, fatherhood, wealth, and so on are different phases of sense gratification. Acts of sense gratification may be performed under the cover of public welfare, nationalism, religion, altruism, ethical codes, biblical codes, health directives, fruit of action, bashfulness, tolerance, personal comfort, liberation from material bondage, progress, family affection, or fear of social ostracism or legal punishment. But all these categories are different subdivisions of one substance, sense gratification. All such good acts are performed basically for one's own sense gratification. For no one can sacrifice his personal interests while discharging these much advertised moral and religious principles. But above all, this is a transcendental stage in which one feels himself to be only an eternal servitor of Krishna, the absolute personality of God. All acts performed in this sense of servitude are called pure love of God, because they are performed for the absolute sense gratification of Sri Krishna. However, any acts performed for the purpose of enjoying its fruit or results is an act of sense gratification. Such actions are visible, sometimes in gross and sometimes in subtle forms. Oh, again. Sri Guru Vedana.
Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare.
So yes, this purport leaves you gasping. Need some oxygen. It's stuffy in here. What's wrong with just being good as conventionally conceived? What's wrong with being a nice moral person who sacrifices for yourself, of course, your family, society, the nation, the environment, humanity. What's wrong with all that? But try to understand what's going on here. We are dealing with the confidential reasons for the appearance of Lord Chaitanya. And that confidential reason is to taste the purest love and to demonstrate what that real love is. This is the confidential gift of Lord Chaitanya. We spoke the other day about how everyone wants love and to love. Conditioned souls are plagued by a sense of incompleteness. And that's why they turn to others. The man feels incomplete without the woman. And the woman feels incomplete without the man. And that's true for all variations of gender experience these days. One is feeling incomplete without what the other can bring to the table, so to speak. So basically, in our social affairs in this world, we are longing for completion. We're feeling empty. We're feeling something is missing. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is telling you, I know what that something is. I know what's missing. It's me. So, you may say, oh, sounds like sentimental religious talk. You're missing God in your life. As the Christian evangelists will say, you gotta get right with God. Actually, that is true in the most profound and deep way. But we have to know, of course, what is the supreme absolute truth and how indeed do we get right with the supreme absolute truth. Krishna is not a moral arbiter and a dispenser of punishment, sending down thunderbolts on the heads of those who disobey him. Krishna is, as we've pointed out in the past days, Suratana, the Lord of Love. And he wants to rescue us from such an abominable standard of love. He wants to rescue us from our pride, in which we think we know what love is. So Krishna stages his pastimes, his lila, to show you, you don't know what you're talking about. You don't know what you're longing for. Focus upon me and I'll upgrade your status. I'll upgrade your understandings, your conceptions. I'll upgrade even your sensory experience. That is bhakti, the transformation of what our senses are experiencing. As I often point out, we're not interested in mere religious belief. We're not interested in mere moral codes, although we recognize the value in those codes. And what Srila Prabhupada has written in the purport about how all kinds of moral codes, biblical codes, ethical codes, they're just different forms of one substance, sense gratification. That doesn't give you license to run amok and do whatever you like. Once Srila Prabhupada stated, how do you recognize who is my disciple? My disciple is a perfect gentleman, perfect lady. Our duty to Lord Chaitanya is to act in this world so that people are attracted to Krishna's instructions, not repelled. We're not acting like avadutas. The python man laying on the ground. We're not acting like Lord Rishabdev, nor are we following his footsteps. You want to follow in Lord Rishabdev's footsteps as such an avaduta? first make sure that when you pass stool, it spreads fragrance for 40 kilometers. Perfumes the whole atmosphere. You can do that in a day. So we're dealing with a split-level reality. We are for the ultimate good. What is the ultimate good? The pleasure of Krishna. At the same time, we recognize what is relative good, and we work with it without investing our everything in relative good. In that way, we remain free from the perplexing attachments of this world, while at the same time, living in this world in a harmonious way for Krishna's pleasure. In other words, we behave respectively from the material point of view, not to satisfy a material point of view, not to satisfy society, but because this is the best way to act for Krishna's pleasure, so that persons will be attracted to Bhakti. Our hopes are not invested in mundane social values. Our hopes, our aspirations are invested in Krishna. He plays his flute. And in Krishna's flute playing, you find that his dearest devotees jettisoned all social standards, all ordinary religion, to follow the real standard, the real Dharma, which is whatever Krishna wants. When Krishna played his flute, they ran out to the forest. Why? To satisfy Krishna's desires. There was not one trace of selfishness. This is inconceivable to us. 100% of their motivation was simply to please Krishna. Krishna will be happy to see us. Krishna will enjoy by seeing us. This is inconceivable. There must be some selfish motive there. Even when the gopis were thinking that we'll be happy by being with Krishna, What's the bottom line of their thinking? That because we'll be happy by being with Krishna, Krishna will see us happy, and we'll become happier. So even their feelings of happiness were all defined in terms of Krishna's pleasure. Krishna will see us happy, he'll become happier. When we see Krishna happier, we become happier. When Krishna sees us happier, he becomes more happier. That's the way it goes on and on. So, devotees on a mature or becoming mature level operate on kind of like a split level. We see the material nature, we see its intricacies, we see its ethical codes, moral codes, and we don't disregard them. Especially since not everyone here is a transcendentalist. That means you're not immediately on the transcendental platform. And if you pretend that you are beyond consideration of normal ethical codes, moral codes, you may run into trouble. We have to know where we're at. Our aspirations are to hear Gopinath play his flute, but we have to know that we are conditioned with a body and mind, and that also, besides being responsible to ourselves for our spiritual advancement while being entrapped in matter, we're also responsible to let others see an attractive example so that they'll also want to pursue Krishna. It's just that we're not core invested in material ethical codes, especially since those ethical codes change all the time. The codes governing behavior between men and women change all the time. The codes in regards to drugs, drug use changes all the time. It's always shifting. Because all those moral codes are based on sense gratification. Well, does this moral code really make me feel good? Nah, I think it's about time to do away with it. I explained to you about the discussion in the USA because some states in the USA are legalizing recreational marijuana. We discussed that? Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. So in other words, people are saying the time has come to recognize that this stuff is good. It makes you feel good. The time has come. They're saying what the hippies said back in the 60s. Hey, you guys, you adults, you drink, we smoke. What's the difference? But back in the 60s, not only in the USA, New Zealand, Australia, you know, smoking marijuana was considered, you know, a countercultural deviant act. Now everyone does it. As you know, here in New Zealand, the police don't bother prosecuting someone for possession of marijuana. So the moral codes are always shifting. What is acceptable behavior between genders? However, whatever gender you consider yourself, all those codes are changing all the time. So a devotee's heart is not invested in mundane moral codes, mundane ethical codes. Yet we are aware of those codes in terms of when they are conducive for actual progressive spiritual life. And also how those codes allow responsible persons to perceive devotees in an attractive way. The example I gave before about for example, picking flowers from someone's property. It's a fact. Everything belongs to Krishna. It can't be denied. But by causing a controversy in getting those flowers, you may well damage the integrity of Lord Chaitanya's mission. So this requires some maturity to understand. And Srila Prabhupada himself explained that if devotees do activities that violate civic codes, whatever they are at the present moment, neophyte devotees get bewildered. Wait a minute, I thought the devotees are just, and I thought they are honest. Now I see they're taking flowers from others' property. So Srila Prabhupada acknowledges that this confusion could be there, even though it is a fact that everything belongs to Krishna. So there's that problem of neophytes becoming bewildered, and there's the problem of damage to the public impression of Lord Chaitanya's mission. So for Krishna's pleasure, we act in certain ways. Not because we are invested in mundane ethics and moral codes, which are always changing, always shifting. It's like 50 years ago. This used to be a Christian country 50 years ago. God defend New Zealand. Christian ethics were recognized. People should be chaste before marriage, and then they should actually marry. Chase Ruiz, he does immigration law. So I'll explain. We have great problems when when a couple, they want to court in bhakti and see if they're suitable for one another in Krishna consciousness. You know, they just don't want to jump into things in a helter-skelter, Rajagunu way. So, and one person's a New Zealand citizen, the other's a foreigner. So, you can't apply for a visa to have the foreign element of the couple stay unless you're living together. Immigration department says, I don't care. We don't care about, you know, anything else except, are you living together? If you're living together, we'll consider. So, look, is this a country based on Christianity? Yeah. Where, you know, they don't want to hear it. Simple test. You say you're in a relationship. Are you living together? You're at the same address. Maybe even send someone around. Check, see. Make sure you're living together. They can even, you know, walk into your abode and, okay, where's your clothes? Stacy is here. I want to see some clothes. So you try to object on moral grounds that, you know, we have regular principles. You know, old-fashioned regular principles that this country was founded upon. They don't want to hear that. At best, you can, if one is Indian, you can convince them to give you a 3-month courtship visa based on culture, but just 3 months. Because they say, hey, it's Indian, you know? You guys all marry according to what your parents say. You know, it's not about courting. We'll give you 3 months. If you haven't married her, she's gone. So this is an example. The shifting moral codes of society. What is the morality now? We don't want any more people in this country unless they bring money. You got $500,000? Sure. Yeah, it is. We got enough people in the country. Unless you have money, then we got unlimited room for people if you got money. So we don't invest our core being in social ethics, mundane ethics. Always changing. What people consider to be biblical codes. People's interpretation of the Bible changes all the time. We keep our vision on Krishna. And keeping the vision on Krishna includes ethics, includes moral codes in terms of what is best for Krishna's pleasure. Krishna describes the qualities of a devotee. Our devotee is honest in his dealings. You read the list of qualities of a devotee, the 25 qualities, and you'll find the essence of all moral codes there. All those qualities are displayed for Krishna's pleasure. So in today's world, it's very difficult to rest your reasons for being moral simply on mundane moral codes, because they change all the time. Each generation changes it. So we take our cue from Krishna. In Bhagavad Gita, he describes the qualities of all the occupations. In Srimad Bhagavatam, the qualities of the various ashramas and occupations are described more profusely. And you'll see ethics there. You'll see morality there. Ultimately, our whole Vaishnava system rests on what? Simply someone's imagination of what morality is or ethics? No, it rests on what pleases Krishna. Knowing that that's the topmost reality, what pleases Krishna, therefore, when the gopis heard the flute, they raced out in the middle of the night, ignoring their fathers and brothers and husbands. They were acting according to the topmost morality, whatever Krishna wants. So the real purpose of ordinary morality should be to train you, prepare you for the transcendental morality. But if you take the Supreme Absolute Truth out of the equation, then mundane morality just becomes like shifting sands. It loses its purpose, and that is supposed to prepare you for the transcendental reality. This purport seems so uncompromising, doesn't it? Seems like that's way out there. All such good acts are performed basically for one's own sense gratification, for no one can sacrifice his personal interest while discharging these much advertised moral and religious principles. But above all, this is a transcendental stage in which one feels himself to be only an eternal servant of Krishna, the Absolute Personality Godhead. So we want to prepare for that stage. And preparing for that stage involves so much practicality, involves so much lifestyle management, involves ethics, morality. Otherwise, you'll never see that transcendental stage. So we should know that at the root of all the ethics and morals we follow is Krishna's flute. We want to become qualified that when we hear Krishna's flute, we drop everything, if that is our particular constitutional relationship with Krishna. But it's an example for everyone. Whatever Krishna wants, that's the principle of bhakti. Feeling oneself to be only an eternal servant of Krishna. This feeling in that, there's emotion. We describe this in Bhakti Bhava. There are unlimited emotional dynamics in feeling yourself to be Krishna's servant. So our morality is based on that. So we want devotees of exemplary behavior. Not that we say one thing and do another. And by following the Vaishnava practices, you become a perfect gentleman lady, such that anyone can see. The only time we're not perfect gentlemen and ladies is when someone attacks Krishna in public. And we get a little feisty. Otherwise, you can't just sit peacefully and quietly while Krishna is being attacked in public. You have to stand up and defend Krishna or leave. Not that. Everyone has a right to their opinion. the people will be impressed because I didn't say anything. I just was being trashed in public. Out of love, actually, you defend someone you love. And it pains you to hear them being criticized. So a real devotee can't tolerate Krishna being offended. His devotee being offended. And we'll take whatever reactions, in terms of material reactions from society, whatever comes, we just say, well, that's the way it is. In other words, people may think bad. What kind of sadhu are you? What kind of yogi are you? You just didn't sit there quietly when someone was attacking Krishna. You're supposed to be peaceful. No, I'm not making judgment. I tell a story about how back in the early 70s when Prabhupada went to Japan, some Indian group invited him to a public program. And there were some Mayavadi sannyasis on the program. And so Prabhupada spoke. And then the organizers of the program, the Hindu program, asked these Indian Mayavadi sannyasis to speak. So they began to talk their Mayavadi talk. And Prabhupada was sitting in the audience, and the boys could see he was getting more and more restless. He was getting more and more reactive. It was like a volcano rumbling. And the Mayavadi is going on and on about how the Supreme Absolute Truth thing has no form and personality. And Prabhupada's. And then Mayavadi went on and on. Finally, the volcano burst. Prabhupada told the devotees, jump on the stage and make kirtan. Of course, the devotees were happy to do that. Jumped him on the stage with cocktails and done Hare Krishna. Yeah, the Mayavadi sannyasi is like, that was the end of the program. 30 years later, when I was in Japan, I met some Indian persons who had attended that program, and they hadn't forgotten it. You know, 30 years ago, we were at a program with your Swamiji, and he behaved in a very interesting way that you were not expecting from a sadhu. So there you see Vaishnava morality in action. Of course, needless to say, no violent reaction. But go on the stage and do kirtan. That was make a statement and defend Krishna. Stop the Mayavadi from speaking his nonsense. Because Prabhupada couldn't, out of pure love, he couldn't tolerate it. So, all right, they may think I'm not a sadhu. I don't care. I cannot. It is against the principles of the Shastra to just sit tight and hear Krishna offended. You either have to leave, or you have to do something. So that's the idea. This is Vaishnava morality. The standard of pure love described here gives us a beacon where we should be headed. And gives us a measuring stick to evaluate where we're at, no matter what stage of bhakti. From the very beginning, a new practitioner can ask himself or herself, is what I'm doing giving Krishna pleasure? At least ask yourself that question. You may say, well, I just can't control myself, or I just can't. I can't get beyond these various forms of sense gratification, subtler, gross mentioned here, public welfare, nationalism, religion, altruism, ethical codes, biblical codes, health directives, fruit of action, bashfulness, tolerance, personal comfort, and liberation from material bondage, progress, family affection, fear of social ostracism or legal punishment. Well, that's me. How can I get away from all that? Okay. Practitioners are on different levels. But we should know what the ultimate goal is. And you can begin. Don't put it off. In other words, well, I'm just a beginning practitioner. Wow, there's no point in me thinking about these things. No. Even from the very beginning, you ask yourself, what am I doing for Krishna's pleasure? How does this action give Krishna pleasure? Do that with your personal relationships. Do that with your possessions. Do that with your social relations. And gradually, Krishna, in your heart, will give you further realization. You have to start somewhere. In other words, the path of love has to begin somewhere. Don't put it off. Like, oh, this is so far beyond us, we're not even going to worry about this. Atmendriya priti vancha tare balikam. Krishnendriya priti itcha dore premanam. So high. Let it stay high. Let it stay Push it way out of sight and make sure it stays way out of sight. Yeah, that principle is really up there. Way up there. Meanwhile. And you're on the ground. You got stuff to do. No, actually, bhakti is a continuum. It's not an all or nothing. It's a development, an organic development of the creeper. The creeper just doesn't shoot out of the ground, you know, 3 meters high. No, the creeper starts off as a seedling, and then a little tiny plant, and then a bigger plant. So Chaitanya Charitamrita is informing you about the ultimate goal. But that ultimate goal is progressively achieved. It's not all or nothing. But to progressively achieve the goal, you have to be aware of it and work for it. Just like people have savings programs at their banks, their various names. You put a little money in, work towards your goal of owning a home. Back when people used to save money. That's how they sold themselves. Working towards that ultimate goal of owning a home. Once you own your home, you start saving money. But it used to be in New Zealand that after you get your home, of course you already have a car, then there's that next essential, a boat. Not like it anymore, because so many people can't even afford to buy a house because housing prices are so sky high. But speak of buying a little farm. But back in, you know, 15, 20 years ago, once you were set up in your home, then you start saving for a boat. All this water around, beautiful beaches, get a boat. Take whoever, you know, whoever's in your family at the moment. Take them for a boat, right? Family relationships don't last, but the boat lasts. But then, of course, when there's divorce, you know, who gets the boat? You know, sell it, you know? But the assets. So complicated. So people do have this understanding in terms of material things that we have to work towards a goal. In bhakti, the goal can be experienced to varying degrees, even in the beginning. It's not that you're just slave in bhakti with no realization, no experience of Krishna, and then one day after 40 or 50 years, right before you die, presto, Krishna! Is that right then? Even the newcomer is tasting Krishna to some degree. I always point out, during prasad time, there's no doubts. There are no doubts during prasad time. Everyone's focused. Krishna Chai. Krishna Supreme Personality Godhead. How was the prasad this festival? You're tasting Krishna during the kirtan. You're hearing Krishna. Krishna's dancing on your tongue. He's going inside your ear. And if you allow him, he'll penetrate to the core of your heart and make your head spin. So it's not that you just spend 40 years, 50 years slogging through the desert, and then at the end of your life, the oasis of the bhakti experience finally awaits you. No, the goal is progressively achieved. So even from the very beginning, you can taste the presence of Krishna to some degree. So we, right now, can apply this standard. Use it as a measuring stick. Is this the desire to gratify my own senses, or is this the desire to please the senses of Lord Krishna? Start asking yourself that question from the very beginning. And gradually, the reality, the transcendental reality, will become more clear to you. And you'll be able to, as the years go by in bhakti, you'll be able to evaluate your whole life in terms of this principle, which is the only meaning, the only real purpose in life. Otherwise, what else is your purpose? Everything else you devote yourself to is shifting sands. It's like nationalism. Old people will complain, this is not the same country I grew up in. There's a lot of different looking people in this country. In the USA somewhere, many are complaining like that. So your nationalism will change. Your religious codes change. All those purposes become so corroded, but the purpose of trying to satisfy Krishna's senses is eternal. That is Sanatana Dharma, the eternal occupational duty is to satisfy Krishna's senses, to think of Krishna's sense gratification. That's what hearing Krishna Leela really does for you. It trains you to think of Krishna's sense gratification. As you read the next verse, the object of lust is only the enjoyment of one's own senses, but love caters to the enjoyment of Lord Krishna, and thus is very powerful. Next verse. Social customs, scriptural injunctions, bodily demands, fruit of action, shyness, patience, bodily pleasures, self-gratification, and the path of Varnashram Dharma, which is difficult to give up. The gopis have forsaken all these, as well as their own relatives, and their punishment is scolding. For the sake of serving Lord Krishna, they render loving service to him for the sake of his enjoyment. That is called firm attachment to Lord Krishna. It is spotlessly pure, like a clean cloth that has no stain. It's a very deep purport from Srila Prabhupada. Again, I'll read it. About that firm, spotlessly pure attachment to Lord Krishna. The author of Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita advises everyone to give up all engagements of sense gratification and, like the gopis, dovetail oneself entirely with the will of the Supreme Lord. Notice, advises everyone. Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami is advising everyone, not just the topmost devotees. He's advising everyone to give up all engagements of sense gratification and, like the gopis, dovetail oneself entirely with the will of the Supreme Lord. That is the ultimate instruction of Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita. We should be prepared to do anything and everything to please the Lord, even at the risk of violating the Vedic principles or ethical laws. That is the standard of love of Godhead. Such activities in pure love of Godhead are as spotless as white linen that has been completely washed. Now, a caveat. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur warns in this connection that we should not mistakenly think that the idea of giving up everything implies the renunciation of duties necessary in relation to the body and mind. Even such duties are not sense gratification if they are undertaken in a spirit of service to Krishna. So you just can't take one purport out of context. You have to have a holistic understanding. Not that we neglect things that are necessary for our body and mind in the name of giving up everything for Krishna. We have to take into account that we have a body and mind. Body and mind require food, exercise, water, and many bodies require other bodies around them to feel stable. That is a normal feature of existence. Because the nature of the body in the material world is that unless there's that other kind of body around you, you feel incomplete. You feel something is missing. So, the bhakti system provides a way. How various physical and mental needs can be met while one is pleasing Krishna and on the path to giving pure pleasure to Krishna. In the Mayavadi impersonalist line that you read about in Chaitanya Charitamrita, it's all sannyasis, no householders. The Mayavadi sannyasis think, as soon as you take sannyas, you are liberated. There's no question of householders. Householders are all an illusion. That's why Srila Prabhupada was so proud of his householders, the five couples who went to London to start the Krishna Consciousness Society there. Lord Chaitanya had many householder devotees. He would celebrate when they had children. In other words, he would congratulate them and encourage them. Srivas Thakur is a householder. Gadadhar Pandit, a householder. Advaita Char is a householder. Nityananda, well, what category do you put Nityananda? Nityananda is Nityananda. So again, we should not mistakenly think that the idea of giving up everything implies renunciation of duties necessary in relation to the body and mind. Even such duties are not sense gratification if they are undertaken in a spirit of service to Krishna. That is the beacon, the spirit of service to Krishna. Even you may have to work your way toward that. But at least you know what the goal is. And the closer that goal is to us, the closer we are to reality, Krishna's pleasure. So Kaviraj Goswami goes on to say, therefore, lust and love are quite different. Lust is like dense darkness, but love is like the bright sun. Thus, there is not the slightest taint of lust in the gopis' love. Their relationship with Krishna is only for the sake of his enjoyment. This is the direction we want to head in. And that goal is progressively achieved. And you can apply that even in your beginning stages of bhakti. The purpose of the guru is to guide in terms of what gives Krishna pleasure. Training you in perceiving Krishna's pleasure. In the association of devotees, you can experience what is Krishna's pleasure. That's why so much effort is put into establishing a community of sincere practitioners, so that amongst themselves, it becomes clear what is favorable to Krishna's pleasure and what is not favorable. If you just obscure that principle, whatever, you know, just do what you can do and, you know, for all fallen Prabhus. Krishna understands. Prabhupada was so merciful. One devotee told me, you know, that Prabhupada said. Sense navigation is just natural, so. Somebody Prabhupada says you here. I know one example. I was speaking to some devotees I gave an argument about. Some devotees were preparing a guidebook for the Grihastha Ashram. And so they were showing it to various senior Vaishnavas, just for their opinion. And just to encourage them in doing this very important service. Yeah, I said, okay, I'll take a look at it. So they had some tentative submissions, and one submission took an extract from a lecture from Prabhupada, where Prabhupada was describing how mundane family affairs go on. And he was saying, husband works hard during the day. When he comes home, what does he want? He wants sex gratification. So he took that way out of context. Prabhupada said, here it is, folks. When a man comes home every day from hard work, this is what he should get. Prabhupada said. Just took it completely out of context. So I pointed that out to the couple, you know. I said, the book is nice, but what's this? You don't live like this. You all don't live like this. So there's an example that people quote Prabhupada for so many things, taking things out of context. Even during Prabhupada's presence, he said, he got so tired of everyone saying Prabhupada said in so many strange ways. He said, whenever you hear someone say Prabhupada said, just think Prabhupada didn't say. It's like a Buddhist approach. You know? No self. You know, because people are just conceiving of the self in material terms. Therefore, no self. We want to build a network of devotees who are trying to be sincere. Sometimes, unfortunately, they're going to be mistakes. We don't want to make a philosophy out of those mistakes, though. Someone makes a mistake, you admit it and try to correct it. In that community of sincere practitioners, it's easy to perceive what is Krishna's pleasure. That's the advantage of putting up with people who, from the material point of view, never associate with. That's the advantage of tolerating differences in the society of devotees. You need those devotees. Even though you're different from them, you need them in order to experience what gives Krishna's pleasure. That is the principle behind the community of practitioners, Vaishnava practitioners. So let us again consider deeply what is our goal. The platform of sense gratification is common to both spiritual life and material life. But in spiritual life, the sense gratification is for Krishna. And in material life, you know who the sense gratification is for. Remember, in the third canto, Devahuti is speaking to Lord Kapila. And she says, I'm sick of the disturbance caused by my temporary material senses. One has to come to that platform to begin your bhakti. You have to become tired. She says she's tired. Asat indriya tarshanat. I'm tired of the disturbance, the struggle brought about by my temporary material senses. I'm tired. So she's appealing to Kapildev. You become my guru. Become my transcendental eye. Because of the disturbance of my temporary material senses, I've fallen deep into the hole of ignorance. But you, by your instructions, can relieve that ignorance so I can go from darkness to light. So there's a very scientific point that Prabhupada explains in the purport in terms of our lifestyles. Because of material contamination, our eternal senses and the eternal activity of our senses becomes covered. And we become preoccupied with a false manifestation. A mirage. That mirage consists of the engagements of our temporary senses. That mirage mesmerizes us. You can just, if you want to be honest, you can just walk around, run around, and say, my temporary senses, my temporary senses. What am I going to do with my temporary senses? My temporary senses need some engagement. I need some temporary sense objects to connect my temporary senses to and have an overall temporary experience. This is being analytical, scientific. What am I hungry for tonight? I'm hungry for some temporary sense engagement. But that temporary sense engagement of whatever type and whatever sensory variety is a covering. It's a pollution. And Devahuti knows that. She said, I want to revive my eternal sense activities. This is what we're begging for when we chant Hare Krishna with feeling. Krishna, take me to another level. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Take me to another level of sense experience. What I'm perceiving is not true. It's false. That's real humility. I need to go to a higher level. I can't do it without your help. That's how Devahuti is approaching Lord Kapila. She wants to get to the platform of pure love. Thank you very much, Hare Krishna.